Hello and welcome to the Everything BDSM podcast. I'm your host, Rope Tiger Daddy, and this is episode number 3. Today we're going to talk about consent and negotiation. So consent and negotiation has been done in writings and podcasts and videos, and I mean, it's been so overdone. I struggle when I write or talk about consent and negotiation to say something different than everyone else has said. But the truth is, there's a lot of different things that need to be said that people aren't saying. People, when they talk about consent and negotiation, they go through the basic things. You need to get consent. You need to negotiate. But they don't tell you how to negotiate. They don't tell you some of the little tips and tricks that make negotiations more successful, the ones that make you more safe. There's things that people don't say, and there's things that, I struggle to say that people don't necessarily take in the right manner. So today we're going to talk about that a little bit. I always like plug my stuff during the podcast. So in this one, I'm going to actually plug something that's applicable, very applicable. Check out my books on Amazon under the pseudonym J.E. Earl. I've got one about consent and negotiation that digs into this topic in a much deeper manner, and we'll put the link to that book in the show notes. So getting started into consent and negotiation. And again, this episode could be very short or it could be very long. There's not a lot to say about consent and negotiation in the definition sense, really, that other people haven't said. But I mean, for the basics, consent is getting permission to do the things that you want to do to someone, that you're getting their permission. And negotiation is how you get to that permission. It's the talking that you do. I had a writing a while back that seemed to resonate with people that was called Talk Until the Sexy's Gone, because people want to maintain that air of mystery and that well, you know, you should be reading my mind a little bit. And you know, don't ask me to do every little thing. Ask me, you know, to do something broad. But that's really where the problems start. And if you're on FetLife or in the community or, you know, on any social media or, you know, in person thing where kink is happening, man, you're going to, that's like the first thing you start hearing about is these consent violations. And, you know, every time you read one, you know, there's a lot of hindsight and Monday morning quarterbacking, but there's things you see and you say, well, why did you do that? Like, why was that something that needed to happen? Why was this how you chose to go about that path? And, you know, it sucks to have people judging you on that, you know, especially with, like, you know, when you've been victimized by something. So it's hard not to do that. But, you know, it's also hard to watch people make mistakes and not be able to help them, not be able to help them correct their mistakes. And, you know, the bottom line is, and people think that this can be regulated or you know, checked out of society or checked out of kink, and it can't be. There's always going to be shit people in kink. There's always going to be shit people everywhere. You know, you can go to your kid's Little League game and there's going to be shit people there. So why we expect to get into kink and we expect there not to be shit people there, I don't understand that. But there's things in your consent and your negotiations that you can put into place that don't necessarily pick these people out, because these people are very, very good at skirting around our safeguards. But I hear so often somebody will say, well, I had a gut feeling about this person that I shouldn't have done this. And then they do it anyway. And, you know, they're like, yeah, all my friends were telling me, don't do it. And then, you know, I had a gut feeling. And then this thing happened and I said, don't do it. And then I went and did it anyway. And, you know, you can't help that. There's, you know, I myself, like, I talk about these things, but, you know, when they're in the middle of happening to you, you can't suss them out. There's too many brain chemicals and too many, you know, feelings and emotions going on that, you know, you tend to ignore the bad stuff because your mind gets focused on this path and you can't take your mind off that path because all you see is the outcome you want, not the outcome that's going to happen. So one of the first things I want to get into is, I guess what I kind of call my laws of negotiation. These are the things that if, you know, someone new came to me and said, hey, you know, if you give me like rules or laws for negotiation, what would they be? What laws would I follow? If, you know, you give me the Ten Commandments, you know, the stone freaking tablet of here's how you need to negotiate, what would they be? So we're going to get into that a little bit. I'm going to go through the rules and kind of my thoughts behind each one. And like most things with me, I promise the rules are very simple. The laws are very simple, but the explanation is a little bit more wordy. So the first one is no one would negotiate in person. It would all be done over text. So when you negotiate in person, it's good to be able to see the person's eyes. And I'm not saying don't ever do it in person, but when you negotiate in person, it's that same thing where, you know, they've studied the psychology of it, where, you know, a person sees a crime being committed and they can almost never recall the circumstances. They always add things and they always embellish things and they always make mistakes about, you know, the perpetrator of the crime and what the crime actually was and what happened. So the reason why I don't like negotiating in person, let me rephrase that. I don't like negotiating in person first. I like negotiating over text. And then when you talk to the person about what the text said, then you can get the visual on them. You can actually see things. And, you know, there's people that are not going to follow this rule at all. They're going to say, I want to negotiate in person. I want to be able to see that person. And that makes sense. But the problem is when you do that, you have no recall. What I see a lot of times is that people will come back and say, well, during negotiation, you said this was okay and this was okay and this was okay. And the truth is that, you know, the person's either just a crap human being, or they thought they were hearing things that they didn't, or they thought they remembered things. What you got to understand is, you know, a lot of people don't negotiate with one person in their lifetime. They negotiate with plenty of people, and you bring those other negotiations into the new negotiations. You think, well, I did this last time and I remembered somebody saying yes to it, but you don't remember who said yes to it. And that's not a good excuse, but that's what happens when you negotiate in person. So for me, the negotiation should be done over text or in writing or something where you can pick that writing up or you can pick that text up and you can say, let me go back and read this a couple times. And this, I guess I should probably reword this law and say, whatever way you have the best recall, because like for me, I read something and I recall it. I type it, I recall it. If I hear it, I don't necessarily recall it. You can literally tell me your name and 5 minutes later, I have forgotten it. And it's horrible. It's horrible to say, but that's what happens. But I prefer to negotiate in text where that negotiation doesn't ever go away. You know, and people can say, well, you know, I don't want to talk to you anymore. I'm done with you. That negotiation's still there. That you can still go back and reference it. You know, if you did something wrong, you can go back and reference what you did wrong, you know, what the meaning of the word changed, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And that leads into my next law. And that's that people would make each other define every little tiny thing. So the reason I say that is people think they know the definitions, but I mean, BDSM and DS, like every year they get more undefined. You know, if you were to ask me in, you know, the early 2000s when I was first becoming interested in DS and BDSM, what's the definition for things? Like we had unimpeachable definitions. We had definitions that, you know, when you looked at it, like it was either meet the definition or didn't meet the definition. And as time has gone by, some of these things they no longer have a definition, or they no longer have a stable definition. So we got that going on. So my favorite example of definitions is, you know, I when I talk to people, especially, well, I have this one little technique. you get these people that are very in sub frenzy, and I'm sure in a future episode we'll talk about sub frenzy a little bit more in depth. But sub frenzy is when someone and doms get it too, and tops and bottoms and whatever. But it happens most often in subs. From my experience and from what most people observe. But it's when people get into BDSM and they discover it for the first time and they want to do everything, everywhere, all at once, all the time, with anyone who wants to do it, anywhere, with anyone, ever, anytime, ever, anyone, and anywhere, ever. And they get that it's sub frenzy because they're like a shark that's trying to feed in a feeding frenzy when there's like a drop of blood in the water, and they go insane. They don't know what the hell they're doing. They just go crazy. But they get into the sub-frenzy and you'll negotiate with them and they'll tell you, I'll do anything. Anything you want. I'll do anything. And, you know, you got to kind of snap them out. And, you know, it's a joke. It's not serious. So y'all don't take this seriously. But, you know, when someone comes to you like that, you have to say, okay, well, which finger do you want amputated? And they go, wait, what? You'll do anything. Which finger do you want amputated? And they'll be like, okay, I won't do anything. Cool. Now we can talk. What's your boundaries? What's your hard limits? What will you not do? So that's one little technique. But the other technique is just to ask them, and this almost never fails to work. You get someone who will say, I'll do anything, or I'll do this, or I'll do that. And you'll say, cool, do you like degradation? I love degradation. Degrade me all you want. Love it. Totally love it. Okay, cool. Well, so what words? Any word. Just you, whatever you feel like. Don't like, well, okay, can I call you slut? No, that's degrading, and it triggers me. I don't like that. It's not cool. It's a hard limit. Okay, so we've established there's a word. What other words are not good? You know, most people have words where they don't, you know, there's either a trigger from their past, a trauma, or, you know, like some body shaming thing that they've had done to them that they don't like. The point of it is that when you ask people for definitions, sometimes you have to wring the definitions out of them. And sometimes you're not going to get definitions. And if, you know, you ask somebody like, okay, well, I like impact. Impact with what? Oh, whatever. Just cool. Just whatever. Just hit me, whatever. Like, no, I'm not going to do that. You're going to tell me what's cool and what's not cool. You know, the 30th time you play, cool. Like, we don't need to talk about that. We've gone through everything. Or, you know, we have a more of a connection where, you know, there's not this unknown factor going on where I don't know what's cool and what's not cool. You know, there's no baseline. There's no boundary there. So, you know, getting people to define things is very, very tough. But for me, if you can't define things and we're negotiating, and there's reasons you can't define them. I mean, like, sometimes, you know, people just don't know. They're like, I don't know what I like being hit with. And you're like, okay, well, can I try these three things and just you tell me what you think? You're still getting a permission. You're still getting consent, you know, in this negotiation. You're still, you know, learning hard limits. You might say those three things and they're like, the two things, yes, that one thing's a hard limit. But the point of it is that people have to define things. And sometimes you got to drag the definitions out of them. I mean, people like that, for me, I just kind of quit negotiating. I just say, you know what, I'm good. This is not worth the risk of not getting a clear definition. I need, you know, if it's like an animal in a cage. You know, they know the boundaries of the cage. But when they don't know the boundaries of the cage, they run wild. You know, if you give me that operating space to operate in, I'm comfortable and I can do the things I need to do. But if you don't give me a space that tells me where the boundaries are, I'll leave the boundaries. I'll just leave the negotiation because I can't deal with that. so that's going to roll us into the next law. And this is kind of a touchy subject. Not like I haven't talked about a lot of touchy subjects already, but this is a touchy subject with some people. And that's that no one would be embarrassed by the questions in a negotiation. So we talked about talking until the sexy's gone. And look, the thing that gets thrown up to me every time I talk about this is, you know, well, I can't negotiate. I'm neurodivergent. You know, there's lots of neurodivergent people out there. I have no hate towards them. I'm a neurodivergent myself. I have OCD and, like, not the cutesy fun OCD where people are like, I'm OCD, I like to have my house clean. Like, that's not my OCD. I mean, like, the, like, not monk level OCD, but I had it a lot worse at one time and I've kind of corrected a lot of those issues. But, you know, my OCD tells me that unless I have clear definitions, unless I have clear boundaries, unless we can talk about things, I can't play with you. And, like, a lot of people will get pissy about that. Well, like, well, how, like, you're shaming me because I'm neurodivergent. I'm not. Like, but if you literally can't talk to me and I literally can't feel safe and trust you and make you feel safe with me and trust me, then we have nowhere to go. We can't go anywhere with this. Like, you know, and there's ways around this. Like, if someone, again, we talked about doing text versus in person. If someone says, in person, I can convey those things. Cool. I'll sit there and take notes. And then I'll show you the notes. Are the notes good? If someone says, well, I'm embarrassed, I'm neurodivergent. Cool. And I can't talk about them in person, but I can write them down. Fantabulous. Write them down. Let's write this down and let's get this knocked out. But you have to understand, it's not just a one-way street. If you can't define things, if you can't talk about them, if you can't express what your hard limits and your boundaries, as a dom or a sub, as a bottom or a top, then all it's doing is setting the play up for disaster. And this is how people catch writings on FET. This is how people get a bad reputation in the community. It just takes one of these, one time, to cause someone immense trauma from either side of the slash and to ruin a reputation or to, you know, really upset the, you know, how people look at kink and DS going forward in the future. It's traumatizing. So we're going to get into the last two laws real quick, and then we're going to I'm going to talk a little bit about consent, because obviously this writing that I'm referencing and the things I'm talking about, we've talked about consent. We've talked about it as kind of like a tertiary item. Obviously, yes, the negotiation gets you to the consent, but we need to talk about consent a little bit as well, in a little bit different way than most people talk about consent and most people define consent. I'm not going to redefine it. I just want to talk about some of the intricacies that people can't wring out of their normal definition. So the last two, this one I'm not going to spend a lot of time on, but for me, there'd be a waiting period. I feel like people do these negotiations and then they jump right into them. And that doesn't let the sub frenzy work out. That doesn't let the brain chemicals work out. You know, if you negotiate and then you have a day or two to think about it, you have a day or two to see the red flags, maybe to see the, you know, have that gut feeling, you know, to research, do some, and God, I don't want to talk about vetting in this episode, but vetting could be its own thing. And, you know, a lot of people rely on other people to tell them if the person they're getting ready to play with is good or not. And that is just, I mean, all kinds of disaster just waiting to happen. I can't, the whole vetting thing just drives me insane. You're looking for other people to keep you safe in the community, and it's not those people's responsibility. Should they have a responsibility to? Yes, I believe they should. Do they have a responsibility to? Absolutely not. Are they going to? Absolutely not. So vetting is a whole nother subject. Again, we're getting into a lot of things here. So the last law, and this is another controversial one. It's not controversial because people say it all the time. It's controversial when you actually do it. But I would normalize walking away. We feel like when we get into a negotiation that a successful negotiation ends in play. That is absolutely not true. 100,000% not true. Successful negotiation is when two people come to an understanding. I understand that you need this. I can't give it to you. You understand I need this. You can't give it to me. Cool. I appreciate your time. I appreciate your energy. I wish you luck. I hope you do well. I can't play with you. Thank you. Like, there's no shame in that. There's no shame in walking away or having someone walk away on you. I have so many people that just something wasn't right when I negotiated. And like, dude, they're like my worst enemies now. Like, they freaking hate me. Like, I didn't reject you as a person. We're not compatible. There's a difference. Like, you're going to find luck with someone else, but as far as my style goes and my play and the things I need to find and what I need to do to feel safe and, you know, just your safety and comfort level with me, what I can see and observe, they didn't meet up. So we have to walk away. We can't continue. But man, people will get so upset. Like, do you want to play and have, I'm not going to violate consent on purpose, but like, if we can't get to an understanding, like, and I'm going to get into another subject that's touchy, is the link between sex and kink and sex, and the fact that so many people don't connect the two, and so many people do connect the two. And the people that do connect the two don't really have shit to say about the people who don't, but the people that don't connect the two have tons of shit to say about the people who connect them. And I've been in negotiations before where I'm like, look, my kink is sex-based. It's sex-related. Sex is the foundation. Do I have to have sex? Absolutely not. Do I want to? Yes. It's one of those things that's like, they're linked for me. they're not linked for you, we're not going to make a good match. And that's okay. I don't need us to be a good match. You don't need us to be a good match. There's people who will do that with you that don't need sex, and there's people that will do it with me that need sex part of it. It's okay. But people will get so mad. They will shame me. They will write things about me. They will say things about me. Well, you know, he's a creepy sex person. Like, okay. Like, I get it. There's a lot of people out there who link the two that don't state that. I clearly state that. It's part of my boundaries. It's part of what I need. If that's not part of what you need, then there's no sense in us negotiating. And a lot of times, I mean, sometimes I will, sometimes I won't need it. And I can play with people like that. But most of the time it's sex-based. And if you're not sex-based, then like I state that very clearly. Like I respect you. I don't disrespect you, but I don't need to play with you. That's not satisfying my needs. It's not satisfying my desire to do things with someone. So, you know, we can be friends, but we can't be partners or play partners or be in a relationship or whatever. So that's one thing that I have to like codify with people, because they just don't understand. Like it's like if the negotiation fails because I wanted something they didn't, or they wanted something that I didn't, you know, you're not entitled to my energy and time. Like I'm not entitled to your energy and time. Just because your energy and time looks different than my energy and time doesn't mean it's worse or bad or better or great or whatever. It just means that didn't match. So that's the laws. Getting into consent just a little bit. Because we touched on it a lot, but like I said, we never actually talked about what consent is other than the definition I think I gave at the beginning, which is just basically permission. So we talked about that a little bit just now with the sex and the kink thing too, but what the consent model ends up being the T thing. And this is, if you haven't seen the T video, definitely check that out on YouTube. It's just a cute little animation, but it talks about consent with analogies, which I freaking love analogies. And it talks about how, you know, consent can be revoked. You know, if you ask someone for tea and they give you tea and you decide you don't want tea, they shouldn't try to pour it down your throat. I mean, it goes very hyperbolic, but it makes a point. And it's a point that I feel like more people need to make. But consent is always revocable until the act happens. And when the act happens, you can't revoke consent. If you have consented up to that point and then the act happens, you know, you've consented to that. A lot of people, and this, I mean, that shouldn't be controversial, but I'm going to get hate over it 100%. If you consent to something and someone does 99% of the thing you consented to, but 1% thing you didn't consent to, then consent was still violated. I think it's up to you to decide how bad that consent is. And, you know, I know there's people out there that, you know, will like, I've played with people that give a boundary. Like, I'm okay with this happening, but I'm not okay with this happening. If you don't say I'm not okay with this other thing happening, you didn't give consent. So if someone doesn't tell me specifically, I'm okay with this thing, then consent doesn't exist. So you can't, a lot of people walk into something just assuming consent exists. So if they say, you know, and again, this goes back to the definition thing in the negotiations. If I say, hey, can I, you know, write on you in marker? And they say, yes. And then I get a pen. Is that the same thing? It's kind of the same thing, but kind of not. You know, so I mean, you have to take these things into account. People get triggered by certain things, certain very specific things. You know, I've had people say, you know, you can do X, but you can't do this Y thing that's very similar. And I, you know, it's not for me to try to suss out why, but you kind of think in your head, like, why is that? And you have to understand that, you know, it's a trauma response, or it's something different that they're not okay with. There's been things like where people have told me something, I've been like, that doesn't make any sense. And it turned out it was like literally a physical allergy to it. Like they literally had a physical allergy. Like, you know, like for instance, like people, like I'm allergic to beans. Like it's a weird thing to be allergic to, but you know, people will be like, well, what about green beans? Okay, there's still beans, but I'm not allergic to green beans. So I appreciate the nuances of the definition. You know, so when I tell people I'm allergic to beans, but I'm not allergic to peas or green beans or this or that, you know, there's more to consent than just saying I'm okay with this. So, but there are people out there who will set up these word traps that you cannot escape from, that, you know, they will consent to something. You know, I'll consent to a paddle. Okay, great. We use the paddle. I didn't say I was okay with an oak paddle. Like, so you have to understand your definitions are either broad or they're very, very specific. So that's the thing about consent. That's, you know, to be honest with you, I wrote a writing a long time ago about how basically you're going to violate consent at some point, whether you're a dom or a sub. You know, I've had subs do some crazy stuff that violated my consent that I told them was not something that I was okay with doing. I've seen subs be violent with other subs and not in a consensual way. So there's lots of little things that happen, and in the heat of the moment with emotion and stuff like that, but they're never okay if there's no consent there. But the fact of the matter is that you're going to violate consent at some point, and you may not even intended to violate consent. You know, I've had to apologize to people that I've violated consent. You know, they've said, you know, well, I didn't specifically consent to that. And I said, crap. Like, you know, I'd asked them maybe about X, but I didn't drill down to Y. Like, the X was okay, but I thought Y was okay because it was part of X, not necessarily okay. So you have to be very careful, especially when you're playing with someone new. Obviously, you know, I've got my slave or my baby girl. When we play, we're CNC, and God, that's a whole other show. Like, I've had like 19 mini shows in this show. But that's a whole other episode where we talk about CNC. But I'm CNC with those two, so I don't have to ask their permission if I want to do something. Like, they've given me blanket consent. They trust me. But when you're playing with someone new, you don't have that. And I guess maybe I should say this real quick. I see a lot of people want to do a CNC scene, quote, CNC scene. Like, I want to meet someone and negotiate CNC. Look, guys, you can't do that. Like, you can, but it's just stupid. Like, there's a lot of people that have gotten in trouble by saying, meeting someone for the first time and just doing CNC. You don't know that person. Like, if needles are, you know, the worst damn thing you've ever seen in your life, and you give me CNC, like, and I don't know that needles are the worst thing ever in your head, then, you know, if I stick a needle in you, it's going to mess you up. And I know there's a lot of people that want that, but take the time and build the trust with someone before you give them CNC. And if you're a dom and someone says, I want to give you CNC, no matter how hard that makes you, stop and think about it, because it's not going to be a good path. It's not going to be something that you want to do, because it's going to fail and it's going to be bad. Okay? So anyway, that's the episode for today. I hope everyone enjoyed it. I hope I made sense. I know there's a lot of topics I rambled on and rambled through, but consent negotiation are so important, and not just the textbook definition. So, you know, the next time you see a writing where there's some, you know, pseudo-dom giving you, here's the definition, like, bro, this has been done a million times. What about consent negotiation? What do I need to know that's new? What do I need to know that people aren't telling me? Hopefully this episode covered a little bit of that. Hopefully you got something out of it. So thanks. Until next time, this is Rope Tiger Daddy, and we'll see you then.